Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot coming your way. It is Deep Dive Friday, and today we are talking about the New York Knicks, 8-11 in their last 19 games. What's going on there? What should we really be concerned about? What are we optimistic about? We dive deep into all things Knicks. And then from there, we check in with a few more awards, Rookie of the Year, All Rookie. We give our Coach of the Year thoughts at the midway point. And then we preview the unrivaled slate. We have a fun batch of matchups coming your way. We talk about what we're excited about, what we're looking forward to. We hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent Steve Jones Jr. Steve, happy Friday. How are you, and are you staying warm?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Cold comes later, apparently, so we'll deal with that. But me particularly, and ready to talk about some basketball.
All righty. Everyone who may be affected by this winter storm, please stay safe. Get your bread. All of the good things.
No,
but I, too,
no,
am excited.
Prayers up. Prepare. Go to the store. Hopefully we all good. All right.
There we go. I, too, am ready to talk about basketball. And as it is Friday, we normally get deep divey on a team. Last week it was the Thunder. This week, Steve, we are talking about the New York Knicks. And it feels like we have had varying degrees of thoughts about the New York Knicks this year, where it was, hey, this offense is really good. What's going on with the defense? And then, oh my, the defense is perking up and this offense remains very good. They win the NBA Cup. And since winning the NBA Cup, they have not been a very good basketball team. So overall this year, Steve, 26-18, they're third in the Eastern Conference, which if I told you that before the year, it's probably degrees of like, this is fine. Or maybe a little bit underwhelming because of where the defense is per cleaning the glass, third in offense, 18th in defense, but still a top 10-point differential. Since December 16th, since they won the NBA Cup title, a 116 offensive rating, that's 13th, and thank goodness they were able to play the Brooklyn Nets and blow the doors off of them to raise that number. A 119.1 defensive rating, Steve, per cleaning the glass, that is 26th in the league. And that was above 120 before that Nets win. And a minus 3.1 net rating that is 19th in the league. So just on a very base level, how are you absorbing this Knicks season? Because you talk often about figuring out what a team is. They hit this point of the season where teams know who you are, so they're trying to poke at things to figure things out. Like, what is your concern level with this recent, like, 19-20 game stretch with the Knicks?
Well, I think this is part of the regular season. This is part of the journey for a team to try and figure out, you know, understand these stress tests for a team's identity. There's many questions about your strengths and weaknesses if you have success. And so we saw the really good part of what the Knicks could be. And I think part of what we have talked about on this podcast is Coach Mike Brown coming in, more of an offensive emphasis, empowering more players to contribute, and ideally, you would think, okay, if our offense is better, we're playing quicker, we have Jalen Brunson, he's cooking at a certain level. So the defense, while it may not be what it was under Tibbs, it can, with the personnel you have, can have a strong base to where we can sustain. So if we have a better offense, our defense might slip a little bit, we can kind of operate in a higher potential. We can be more versatile. We can work it out. I think the issue we've seen, and number one, like, winning is hard, Nikias. Sustaining success in this league is hard. It's not easy. You get to this point of the season, you cross the halfway mark, you're not just seeing yourself in the mirror, right? You're seeing all these other teams that are staring at you, wanting what you have achieved and trying to take you down a peg. And I think what they have to understand, that what they have to solidify, is their base. You know, they have to solidify their defensive base. They have to be a team that is able to be consistent on that end, have the right mindset on that end to be able to, you know, not be a team that gets beat off the dribble every night, that struggles in transition, because they have clear things that teams are going to attack. They're going to put Jalen Brunson in action come playoff time. They're going to put Karl-Anthony Towns in action. And so you need to have the ability to know when we're switching, when we're being active on ball, when we're showing help. We have to have all that sewed up so that when we have to deal with those parts, we can live with portions. It can't be a wheel of we're struggling with our base defensively and teams are poking at those two, that makes it really tough. And then offensively, I think that this is a natural portion for them. Like, there's been slippage on that end, and I don't know if it's necessarily the Knicks' fault. I think it's teams adjusting and understanding. Like, we're going to be physical with you. We're going to pressure you. Like, it's fun. It's fantastic that Mike Brown has come in and we want to play with tempo. We want to get into our sets early. We want to put more pressure on teams and get into multiple actions. The issue with that is, okay, we put full court pressure. We get you back to starting your actions with 16 on the clock. And now, okay, that movement, how much are you getting to? We switch off ball. We are physical off ball. How much are you now putting pressure on us? And so it's navigating those aspects offensively. And if the offense slips, which it did during that stretch, now you're in transition defensively. So on top of your defensive flaws, which we'll get to, you're not set. And so we are able to run on you. That if you go back and watch that Dallas-New York game, it's just a whole lot of transition from Dallas.
It's just
that. And it's just like, okay. They can't live with that. So I think for the Knicks, they have like a twofold understanding. The positive is you have seen the good, so you can believe in the good. The opposite is now, how do we get back to it? Not an odd point for this part of the season, but they have to navigate that portion.
Okay. I think that's all fair. I'd say let's hang on the defense for a bit, because I think that is the loudest portion of the Knicks' struggles. And as we talked about heading into the year, we think this offense is going to be good. We think this offense is going to be a little bit different with what Mike Brown wants to do and who he wants to empower. You just have to get the defense to a level. It'll be great if this is going to be if this is a top five unit. It'll be very good if it's a top 10 unit. You just can't be bad, was kind of the general thought heading into the year. And so the fact that they have been one of the five worst defenses in the league for, this is a 19 game stretch that we're talking about here. Like, this is not an insignificant, this isn't a bad week. Like, this is a bad run to the point where, you know, they get blasted by the Mavericks. And to your point, it's a lot of transition attacks. And we have the players-only meeting that isn't a players-only meeting, but the players met maybe with coaches, maybe without coaches. I don't know how we are designating that, but whatever. And then they come out and just beat the brakes off the Nets. So, like, you take that. But, like, I don't know if that's enough to just say, oh, everything is fixed now, that kind of thing. But to the defense, I guess the thing that stands out to me with this group is, like, it feels like there is a lack of trust in each other. And I think that bleeds into, to your point, are we switching this or are we not? If we're going to be active, is the help going to be in? Is it not? If this is a non-shooter, are we helping off of this guy and being intentional about that? Or do you think that's actually a breakdown and I messed up my assignment? Now you're going to cover that guy and now we're in scramble mode once again. And, like, you see that in transition as well. Like, who are we picking up? How quickly are we picking up that person? Are we delegating assignments from there? Overall, this year, the Knicks top 10 league in terms of limiting transition attacks, which is a good thing. They're 29th in terms of actual points per possession allowed in transition. Like, that is not very good. And if you filter it for that stretch since December 16th, the splits are not what you would like for them to be. I will just put it that way. Not going to bore the audience with a bunch of numbers, but it's not good where the Knicks are there. And so I just wonder, and I'll toss this to you, Steve, is there a tweak you'd like to see them make to kind of establish more of that trust, to your point, building up that defensive base? Or is this just going to take time? Like, what goes into fixing that kind of thing?
Well, number one, what I'll tell you is you never bore our audience with numbers. They love it. It makes my brain hurt sometimes, but that's okay. Number two, I think it's just, they have to establish the base. And so what I mean by base is, what can I trust every single night from you defensively? What are you going to do every single night? Are you keeping the ball in front? Are you pressuring the ball? Do you trust your help? Do you know when to help? Do you have the nuance to understand, okay, there's a drive, I'm at the nail. Am I going to oversell to help and open up a different play? Or am I going to be able to know, okay, they got that? That's the issue I feel like for the Knicks. Are they a perfect defensive unit? Absolutely not. But I think when you hear, like, Coach Mike Brown, you hear Jalen Brunson, they're talking about the mindset. When they have the mindset to consistently work on that end of the floor, they can live with the results. You know, they can, they can have active ball pressure. They can be physical off ball. They can be ready to anticipate any sort of movement and be prepared to navigate screens. They have the personnel to get that done night in and night out. It's not a perfect world. But when they give that effort, you see it jump off the screen. The issue for them is containing the breakdowns. And so when they get into the mode where they're not switching properly, off mm-hmm. ball or on ball. That opens up plays. When they get into the mode where they're over helping and saying, okay, I need to be here to protect Karl-Anthony Towns or Jalen Brunson or protect against this drive. Now you're opening up a play. When they get into the mode where they're not helping as much, when teams go to pick and roll and they're able to kind of just navigate and throw passes, and now you're balancing that out. What New York has to avoid, right, is the world where they are having a rotating wheel of issues defensively, right? It can't be a world where you kind of set a back screen and, you know, there are times, especially against Phoenix, like Devin Booker sets a back screen, Bridges has him, doesn't want to switch because Brunson's involved. It's an easy layup, right? And Josh Hart against Brooklyn sees a back screen. It's like, hey, OG, I'll take the switch. OG's like, no, I'm fighting over. Opens up a three for Michael Porter Jr. Those don't seem like massive issues, but you need to have that trust, as you said, to be able to navigate that. When they're working well, you see it. When they are not, you see how they try and overcompensate with those issues, right? They try and show that early help to be like, hey, I'm in. You have to make a play, and that works. But now that early help can work against you. Teams go empty corner actions, and you pull in. They hit a three. And now you're like, well, I don't want to help as much. And now you don't have the help. They hit the roller. They have to live in a world where they pick their poison. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I love that you put it that way, because I think it would be an easier conversation to have if it was just, you know, these baked in help issues or trust issues defensively. And it's because Brunson's getting put in action, or because Cat's being put in action, or those two are being put in action together. And they're just trying to navigate that. The fact that it's kind of been everyone is where it's been most concerning for me. And I was, you know, joking with you a little bit before we started recording. Like, I had this rant loaded up. I don't think I'm going to go full blown rant. But the screen navigation for New York has been so disappointing for like the last month and a half, if not longer, even when the defense was kind of trending up. Because if you remember when we had a conversation about the Knicks earlier this year, I was one of the ones saying, hey, Mikal Bridges playing incredibly well. He's certainly enjoying the empowerment offensively. He's kind of back to all defense levels. I do not feel that way anymore about the Mikal Bridges defensive experience. I have to, I guess, adjust my expectations for like what his screen navigation is at this point. Because it started out well this year. And like the amount of times that he gets dinged, which then if he's defending with Cat, Cat's like, well, shoot, do I need to come all the way up here? Am I just holding a beat until he gets back? You having that indecision up top, and then behind that, okay, we're kind of loaded in. Do we need to stay here? And if you're facing any kind of offense that has off-ball screening, off-ball movement, any kind of exchanges, any kind of cuts from the wing, the Knicks have to navigate that part too. And it's like, well, darn. So like watching Mikal get dinged with his screen navigation, watching OG Anunoby, who been in and out of the lineup this year, has been very good defensively overall, like seeing that kind of tail off during this stretch. Also not making shots, but I think they'll come back around. If those are your two best defenders, or at least in theory, your two best defenders, and you can't trust them up top, you already have question marks about Jalen Brunson. You already have question marks about Cat. Like, how many people can compensate for four of the five being some kind of issue? And if not an issue, at the very least, I don't know if he's got it. And like that indecision, I think, kind of permeates this group right now.
Well, I mean, I think it's screen navigation goes two ways, right? So I think I understand what you're saying, where it's like, hey, you're getting hit and now we're dinged and we're tough. We got to talk about how well they navigate as far as knowing when to go over and go under, but they also get hit on those unders, Nikias, to where it's like, okay, I don't want to put Cat or Mitchell Robinson in action. I'm going to be here, be physical, slide under, and now we give up these threes. And so it's the blend that they have to figure out. They have to be able to trust each other enough to know, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to execute this consistently, and we're going to be able to have that base. So I think the base is strong. And the reason, Nikias, that I think they need to have the stronger base, and they had it early, like you just have to, like, defensively, you have to have, from a coaching perspective, an understanding of what we're not good at, right? You need to be able to, like, every coach wants a level of control to a degree in a game that you can't control. But you want to at least have an understanding of what we're up against and what we may struggle with. When you are now presented with two extra issues because we're not switching properly, we're not navigating screens, we're not keeping them on front, it's like when like your auto pay hits on like four things at the same time. And it's like, hey, I know, but also why? And now I'm trying to figure out what to do next. So mm-hmm. I think that's important, but I think it also ties into, if that base isn't strong enough, now the Karl Anthony Towns and the Jalen Brunson portion becomes a little bit more of an issue, because mm-hmm. with Cat, and I've been a big believer in the Karl Anthony Towns defensive experience, right? I think that you can get to a point, even if you're not the best defender, you can do your job defensively. The question now becomes with Cat, what is the best scheme for him? What's the best scheme that works with this Knicks defense? And do you get to a world where those issues tie into your other issues defensively, where you don't have trust and you now tend to overhelp? Mm-hmm. For me, and I think we've talked about this, Cat's most trusted coverage was probably just him being at the level, right? You knew there would mm-hmm. be a certain level of activity. You knew he'd be up. You knew defense would know to be in early and they'd be able to rotate out of it. That has regressed as far as like Cat's timing hasn't felt mm-hmm. the same. Cat's contain hasn't felt the same. And when it recovers has been good, the recoveries aren't great. The rotations, like the early help isn't in. That's felt like a mess. And so you get to this mm-hmm. point with the Knicks where they're like, okay, side pick and roll. We're going to keep it on the side, which extremely ironic considering they just got rid of Tom Thibodeau.
Get rid of Tibbs.
Icing side pick and roll. But okay, that puts Cat in a drop. Okay, ties back to your screen navigation point. You have the people who should be able to navigate screens, but if I run an action, put Jalen Brunson and make him navigate, what do we have? Is Cat going to have the anticipation, the preparedness to protect the rim? You know, it's not necessarily, mm-hmm. you don't have to block shots. You just have to be in the right spot to dissuade things to let your player recover. I have liked his effort on some of the late switches. When a mm-hmm. guard's able to get downhill, snake, okay, I'm going to take the matchup. We'll recover. We'll be good there. That's a positive. But how do you navigate that? Because if you like, do you like the double big lineup, Nikias?
I liked it more earlier in the year than what it's looked like as of late. But I mean, that is just the Knicks experience right now.
Understood. But here's the thing. You go double big, we compound the issue. Because now what's Cat doing? Is Cat mm-hmm. in a drop when Mitchell Robinson is in? Maybe. Sometimes. But he may also be mm-hmm. a switch. And he has made the effort to switch, to keep the ball in front, to make multiple efforts. So I don't want to take that away from him. The issue is now, okay, how consistent is his weak side play when he is not on the ball, when he's having to help and recover and get back out? So how right. do you navigate that portion? How many times do you want to switch him? Do you trust your help around it? And then you see teams all the time, they say, hey, we're going to run double pick and roll. And the screeners mm-hmm. are going to be Jalen Brunson's man and Karl Anthony Towns' man. And hey, what are you guys prepared to do about this? And so mm-hmm. you get to like this mix of regular season questions and playoff questions. And it's like, if my advice to the Knicks would be like, get your base in order so you can now navigate these other portions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like I think that's fair. And like Cat comes with his own limitations that we should all understand at this point, this late in his career. And it's like also exacerbated by the fact that the structure around him either hasn't been good, hasn't been consistent, or both. If we're just talking about this recent month. And like that's where go back to our conversation we had earlier this week. We're having the All-NBA conversation and the All-Star conversation. It's like, where are you at on Cat? And just the criticism around Cat. Because, like, I don't want to come off like y'all are being too mean to Cat, leave him alone, he's great, et cetera. He is a great player, to be clear. Like, there are valid criticisms to levy towards Cat. He has these inherent limitations. As you mentioned, the at-the-level thing, which has always been my answer with him, is what his best coverage is. If you're not going to be good at your best coverage, like, at a certain point, like, what do you do? Like, I appreciate the late switches, too, but, like, I know you're not Bam. Like, I know you're not just going to ask you to switch 20, 30 times a game and just be okay with that. So, like, you do have to get back to doing your job. Not the wow. And so, like, I don't want to lose that portion of it. But it's just been so weird watching the structure around. As you mentioned, Cat and Jalen Brunson, like, something that's been popping with me, and we've talked about this before in the history of this podcast with Brunson in New York, is like, okay, what is his coverage? Are we asking him to navigate Are we going to show him recovers? Are we switching him? If we do switch him, are we just trusting him to hang and we just help behind that? Is it going to be switch and double? It doesn't feel like they've, at least over the last month or so, they haven't had great answers to that either. Can I give you a quick stat, Steve?
Absolutely, my friend.
With Jalen Brunson. So before December 16th, when Jalen Brunson was doing the show or recover or a flat out trap when involved as a screen defender, the Knicks were giving up 0.9 points per possession on those trips. Pretty solid number. Since December 16th, that has skyrocketed to 1.22 points per possession, which is essentially like worst defense in the league levels.
Okay. And so if you're watching on YouTube, you can see Jalen Brunson doing the prayer emoji. That's what Knicks fans should
do. That's what they should be doing. And it's just like, go back to that Dallas game. And like, these were two possessions that the Knicks ultimately didn't give up points on, but you kind of see, and it's something that's kind of popped for me on film when watching the Knicks on defense, whereas, okay, we're going to go show and recover with Jalen Brunson. The best version of him is when he gets up, gets out of there very quickly, he retreats, or at the very least, he's going to get up there, he's really going to pressure the ball, kind of push that ball handler back, and then get out of there. There have been these reps with Jalen Brunson as of late to where he's going up to show, he just kind of flies past the ball handler, and whoever he's defending with is like, okay, I guess I need to stay here then, and then the help behind that is like, well, I guess we got to stay here then, because Jalen Brunson is now like 10 feet behind the play trying to get back to somebody, and it's like, you can't have those. Like, there are already just size questions and things. Like, if you are botching that and the help behind you hasn't been good either, like, everybody looks bad when something isn't happening. So,
no, I think it ties back to just having your base. Like, you want to be in a position where defensively we know what we're going to give up, but we can live with it, and then we can build on it, right? Because we've seen the Knicks be willing to switch Jalen Brunson on certain players and say, hey, go ahead, give the switch, contain, contest, it is what it is. There are times where that player is just taller, takes four dribbles, goes near the block, shoots over him. That happens. But there are times where he's been able to kind of be physical and contain a drive and be okay. The issue now becomes the communication aspect. It can't be Jalen Brunson sees screen coming. Jalen Brunson says, hey, I'm going to switch on this. Defender doesn't believe in Jalen Brunson switching on that. You have two on the ball. Now a pop happens. It can't be Jalen Brunson is like, okay, I'm not switching. I'm going to show early. And then, you know, the defender is like, cool, good job. Glad you took that. I'm going to take yours. And now a lane is open. You have to be clean and consistent defensively, even if you're going to take a hit, even if you have a weakness or an aspect that doesn't work out for you. It has to be something that you are able to understand and comprehend. That's what the Knicks have to figure out. Get this thing solid. Pour some concrete down. Put some roots down.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Get some slides on. Whatever you got to do to kind of have a base, get that settled, and then understand what's coming next. Take the wheel out of the equation. I think the defense is so important for them so they can get out and run, so they can attack on the other end. The offense is taking a step back at certain times because teams are more physical. Teams are pressuring the ball more. Full court pressure, we talked about that. But I think those things are fixed. Like, you can fix those things. I think we both would agree we have a confidence in the Knicks offense that they will be okay on that end. If they want to hit their championship goals, they want to hit their championship ambitions, they have to be at a certain level defensively. And that's where I'm at right now, because you mentioned early, hey, they're the 3 seed. Boston's 2. Detroit hasn't left. You were knocking on Detroit's door. And now look where you're at. And you think Philadelphia is afraid of you? Do you think Orlando is afraid of you? Do you think Miami is afraid of you? Do you think any of these teams that could be the 3-6 or even the 2-7 are scared of what you bring to the table? That's the world you got to live in. This is the Eastern Conference. This is what we're dealing with. And so you have to prepare for a different version. You've done a lot of good things. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, this is not the Knicks are trash. No, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
But you got to understand what you need to do to go to the next level, because you're a lot closer to the Raptors than you are to the Pistons.
Yeah.
Safe space. You're locked. Yeah, the Cavs are right there.
Hey man, we talk about this in the group chat this week. Like, I'm just kind of ready to talk about the Cavs. We're not going to do this on this episode, but hey man, some things are happening. Some things are intriguing to me. We're going to be talking about the Cavs soon. So Steve, I have a respectfully messy thought and then a question for you as we transition to the offense.
Okay.
To put a bow on the defense bit, with all due respect to these two players, they have played well. Landry Shamet and Deuce McBride should not be this important to the Knicks defense.
No, you gotta respect scrappiness. You gotta respect activity. You gotta respect full court pressure. You gotta respect dribble handoff. I'm running through that. You gotta respect that. Respect the small scrappy guard fighting for their life.
I do. I think for me is like ideal case. Like you were getting again all defense caliber stuff from OG or all defense caliber stuff from Mikal and Josh Hart's playing well and Mitchell Robinson does the rim protection. Like those two, Shamet and Deuce, they should be more bonuses. They should be, oh, here's the second unit wave, and they're going to help. They've just kind of been two of their best guys. And that's where I'm just like, hey, I don't think this is what y'all were budgeting for heading into the year. That's the major point.
No, you are masking this as criticism of their wings. I understand it now. It's settling. What I would say is the secondary reason that they're important is because of Mike Brown's willingness to play these three guard lineups, right? And so those two have fully understood the mission. Hey, if I want more of these minutes, if I defend at a high enough level, I'm going to be out there, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's willing to play it. And so it's going to be interesting to see the rotation, the splits. Like, we don't have to belabor that. I'm sure we'll revisit it. But, like, you have Clarkson, you know exactly what he's going to do. And you have Kolek, you know exactly what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. McBride and Shamet are kind of the ceiling elevators to a degree as far as, ooh, if Deuce has it going offensively and he is active defensively, it's tough to deal with. If Landry is active defensively, not getting hunted, and he's making shots, it's tough to deal with. So that's kind of where I think that gets interesting for New York.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Now, to flip it to the offense, which, again, has been the strong suit of New York's team this year overall. During the stretch, they've been more so average, 15th in offensive rating since December 16th, per cleaning the glass. I actually want to start with Cat and Brunson, because I think the Mikal and OG thing is probably pretty easy to talk about. Hey, be consistently aggressive, knock down your threes. OG in particular has just been in a cold spell from behind the arc. Like, I think those things are going to flip. Where are you at with the Brunson-Cat partnership offensively?
Are you asking about Cat in particular, or just those two together?
No, those two in action together, because it's another year in which it starts hot and then teams are like, hey, what if we just treat you like this? And then the effectiveness wanes. And so, like, are you concerned about them not hitting their ceiling together?
I'm not concerned about them together. It's just how teams counter Cat. He's dealt with this forever. Hey, you're doing real good, man. Switch. Hey, you're doing great, man. Here's a wing. Hey, Jalen Brunson, you're doing fantastic. Here's length. Like that's just the inevitable deal they're going to face, and that's just an example of your success coming back at you. I think for me with Cat, like, I'm not worried about those two, especially because the Knicks have, it's not as much we're going to wait and run a pick and roll with these two or run a post up. You know, they have more around their offense. And so they've had good moments after they flow, and now Cat's catching at the elbow and flashing, and now he can be a hub. And so it's going to be on Cat to get the drives to an area where it feels better than just HB dive with an occasional Euro step. You know, I think he's got the mix of, I can get a switch, get a deep seal, I can space the floor, I can be in action with different people. We know what he can do offensively. Jalen Brunson's just been very good all year long. It's more so less them in partnership and more making sure you have them going at the same time. That, to me, is the most important thing. And I think that's been the balance for Coach Mike Brown and figuring out how to get the most out of Cat, not to integrate him into the system, as many say, but it's just like, okay, if we want to get him in the post, what does that do to our offense? How does that affect our flow? Because now, okay, we took 7 seconds to get Cat the ball in the post. And it's not like Cat is always the most quick when it comes to decision making, So if he wants to jab, jab, pump fake, that's five more seconds. And now, boy, I hope you made the shot. And so it's like, okay, how many of those is going to result in help, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. I think to bounce off what you said, like, it's also funny because you have this cat ordeal also with, hey, sometimes these catches are also getting pushed out. So he's doing all this stuff 19, 20 feet from the basket on top of all of that. But like, to your point about getting those two going at the same time, like, I agree with you and I think it is important. I will say, like, on a very basic level, it would be easier to get those two going at the same time if they could consistently generate good offense together. Like, to your point about, hey, we're going to turn some of this into switches. Like, the thing that's been popping for me, and, like, it started with, probably didn't literally start with this, but as far as, like, this caught my eye, I want to keep a close eye on this. Like, that Clippers game where Zubac's like, I'm just going to be at the level or I'm just going to show sometimes. And, like, watching Brunson and Cat navigate that, you would think, all right, they're getting two on the ball. This is going to be a Cat pop. Or if he does dive, it's going to be a quick pass to Cat. And now it's 4-on-3 or 3-on-2, whatever the case would be. And it kind of wasn't that. It was more so something that we talked about last year on the pod when discussing Jalen Brunson's playmaking growth. One of the things that I liked was he's seeing two, he's getting it to the wing very quickly, and then they kind of play tic-tac-toe from there. I think teams are getting more used to that with Jalen Brunson, and like that's concerning is probably too strong of a word, but it's like, huh. Jalen, and I talked about his playmaking growth again this year, the lobs to Mitchell Robinson, he's becoming a better interior passer. But it's like, okay, Jalen needs to take another step as a playmaker, I think, to make this work with the Cat pick and rolls in particular. Because if you have switches, like there is a tiny window for like pocket passes if Cat slips out of there. But like when he is getting dropped or when he is getting two on the ball, there are windows that Jalen Brunson just kind of has to access more consistently than he has been. And like, again, the Clippers game kind of sparked the thought, and I was going back through some Knicks stuff yesterday to kind of prep for this. And so something that I looked up was like, okay, what exactly is the Cat Brunson pick and roll looking like? Before December 16th, about 23 picks per 100 possessions, 1.08 points per possession on any trip featuring a Brunson Cat pick and roll, which is a very good number, among the best among high volume pairings. They were seeing switches on about 20% of those. They were seeing two on the ball about 10% of those. Since the 16th, Steve, about 24 per 100 possessions, so about similar volume. 0.96 points per possession, which is more average, and certainly not where you want to be with these two talented offensive players. Switch rate has dropped about 7%, which is interesting to me, to your point about let's just put a wing on Cat, et cetera. The blitz rate is at nearly 13% now. And again, it's like Jalen Brunson sees to get it to McHale on the wing or something. Not saying that as a bad solution, but if you zoom out to the overall, how do we get Cat involved? The fact that he's not consistently getting these kind of pops for threes to help with the three-point volume, he's not getting these dives on time to where he can attack without having to worry about somebody sliding under him and exacerbating the turnover issue. It's like, I feel like some of that is on Jalen. And again, some of that is just defense is kind of adjusted to how he wants to approach that coverage in particular. So it's just something that I'm kind of keeping an eye on. I hope I'm not like overthinking that, but it's interesting to me how those two are kind of playing together. And again, it's another year where they were here for the first 2 months of the year. And as the season goes on, the efficiency starts doing this. It's just kind of like, it's weird.
Understood. The E word has popped back up. So that is my cue.
That's your
cue. To ask you if you have any final Knicks thoughts.
I think final Knicks thoughts for me. There's some rumblings about a Gershon Yabusele trade. And he also had like the tweet or post or something kind of alluding to this may be it for him in New York. So I guess we want to see what New York wants to do there. To your three guard point, it's been interesting tracking. Hey, Tyler Colette is getting minutes. This is cool. Oh no. Let's sit you down for a little bit. Hey, Jordan Clarkson, we really appreciate the scoring. Hey, Big Dog, what are you doing? You come sit next to me. I am kind of curious like how much faith level Mike Brown has in the secondary guards right now. So that part is something I'm keeping an eye on as well. Just hope Mitchell Robinson is okay. Just a general thought there. That probably does it. I want better from McHale on both ends. And I want better from offensively from OG. But that's kind of, again, I'm not saying the Knicks are just finished kind of bit, but it's been odd. You got to turn it around. Nets game should be a first step for him, but we will see where it lands. Did you have any closing thoughts?
Well, I was going to say, go look at the last time they had a get right game against the Nets and how many games they won after that. But I will say I have faith in the Dunkers to stick with us after this break. We will be back tapping in with some more award talk, rookie of the year, coach of the year. Maybe I have a rant. You never know. Stay tuned.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to continue checking in on awards as we have now technically passed the midway point of the season, but we're rolling through them. It's time to talk about the rookies. So we're going to discuss rookie of the year, where we're at all rookie teams for the first time this year. And then we're going to flow into coach of the year, which not individual player award because duh, they're coaches. But I think an interesting conversation can be had around some of the coaching season that we've had and what our ballots, if we get them, will look like. But let's start with the rookies. Let's start with rookie of the year, Steve. How many, because rookie of the year ballots generally your top three, how many players did you consider for entering your top three? Or do you just have a firm three at this point of the year?
I had a firm three.
Okay.
So if you've ever looked, you can see my rookie rankings every month on Yahoo. But I've had a pretty consistent top three. It's been some combination of Cooper Flagg, Colin Knipl, and BJ Edgecombe for me. I do feel like they have separated from the pack. And so for me, it's those three, and it's just, okay, how do I balance out? Hey, that's me.
That is tremendous. So
how do I balance out the contributions they've had, the impact that they've had, and like the pressure that they're under? So for me, I think all three have been amazing, and all three have done great things for their teams, right? Cooper Flagg, under, you know, a context that wasn't ideal at the start, it has turned it around with confidence and contributions and leading the Mavericks in points, rebounds, assists, and steals. That's not easy. And so that's impact every night. Colin Knipl has been insane this entire year with his consistency. Shooting the ball the way that he has is one thing. It's another thing to be able to add layers onto that. He's such a great screener. He knows how to set up angles. He slips out and attacks. He knows how to create separation when he's off ball. And he's underrated as far as turning the corner and be able to get to his spots, get in the paint, and put pressure on teams. The Sixers are not in the spot they are without what VJ Edgecombe has done. And I think that's an important thing to recognize and remember. His consistent play, even if it's dipped down, he's had months where the shooting has gone down, the drives have gone down, but his consistency as far as having the understanding has allowed the Sixers to have a base where Tyrese Maxey thrives, he thrives, we have drive and kick, we have movement, and that allows us to play well without Joel Embiid in the lineup. And now Joel Embiid comes in, and VJ Edgecombe has more of a way to play with him in two-man game, have more wiggle room with him. And so for me, those three have really been the ones. Everyone else has gotten into an interesting position in my brain, and it's not their fault. I think, you know, we're sticking on rookie of the year, right?
Yeah.
Those are my three. I'll swing the rock. Have you had some consternation about the top three? That's a word, right?
We will allow it for this episode. No, it is a word, but that's a very funny you working that word into this conversation. That is insane for you. I just want you to know that. But you will be in comments about that throughout the weekend. I just want you to be prepared for that. Consternation. It's just not a word. You're just adding the K for conquer. That is insane. Anyway, I am in a similar boat as you in that the top three is kind of the top three. I think for me, it's been kind of trying to balance, like, okay, how good is this Derrick Queen season going to be? What kind of strides will he make defensively? Because if we see any strides there combined with what the playmaking and the drives, and that's been like, ooh, there may be a case for him to kind of crack this top three. I don't know if he gets to one without like injury to somebody ahead of him or like a drastic drop off in the second half of the year. But like, okay, he can at least get into the consciousness for me, break it into the top three, him battle that with VJ or something like that. And there was a similar bit with Cedric Howard, where he starts the season shooting the leather off the ball, that dips, but he still has this responsibility. He's initiating a little bit in Memphis. The off-ball stuff still pops in terms of his spot-up shooting, the cutting, the offensive rebounding. Defensively, he's still taking on tough assignments. Like, okay, do we get an efficiency bump to where he's now challenging BJ? And then if anything happens to the two guys up top, I may decide there. But as of recording, I think it is kind of like firm top three and then a little bit of a dip between before getting to those other two and some other names we'll talk about as we transition to the all rookie teams. But for me, oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I enjoy your graphic of your first team all rookie. I think for me, those five names, like Khan, Cooper, VJ, I have Cooper's rookie of the year, you have Khan, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Cedric Coward has been a constant, and it's been like, what is this? But mm-hmm. I think the thing I've liked about Cedric Coward is the shooting was insane to start the season in a way that it shouldn't have been, and it regressed. And it regressed, and it regressed. But to have a layer where you're Cedric Coward, right? Mm-hmm. And he was able to, like, he went from shooting 30% from three in November to 27% in December, and he shot 50% from the field in that month. That yeah. tells me that you've grown in other areas, and that may be more important than just being pure three and D. So his mindset to kind of turn the corner drive, the cutting that he's had when he's spaced on the perimeter, like that's important, and his defense has been key. So his impact, every time in my head, I'm like, I don't know if Cedric has done what he's done. And then I look at the tape, I look at the numbers, I'm like, actually, this is a pretty consistent player only getting better. And he's doing the things that I actually like him to do. Like, he's mm-hmm. got a mindset to turn the corner. He's not just settling for a mid-range pull-up. He's going to get that left-hand layup off no matter what he can. And so the adjustment was fantastic for him. With Derek Queen, it's a machine in the sense that we have seen what he can do as far as, mm-hmm. hey, would you want to give me a gap? I'm going to drive. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to set up a spin. I got nifty footwork. I got great passing. Now he has to navigate the portion of the season where you're on the scouting report now, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
Cooper Flagg had to deal with it. Khan has to deal with it. BJ had to deal with it. Derek Queen's now at that stage. So how does he adjust to teams understanding, oh, we know what you're doing now, and we respect mm-hmm. it. It's a sign of respect to get on the scouting report. Yeah. But you now have to figure out how to navigate that. And then I think for me with Derek Queen defensively, it's the second effort for me. I'm fine with the first effort. What's your recovery look like? And are you ready to make something on top of that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I think that's all fair. I want to ask you a question about the top. I think we have the same five names on the all-rookie first teams, and we have the same mm-hmm. three names for Rookie of the Year. And so, as you alluded to, I am still hanging on to Khan Kanipal at one for now in terms of Rookie of the Year. Cooper Flagg at two. I think you have Cooper Flagg at one and Khan at two. As you made the flip on the last, what was it, December 16th when we talked about Rookie of the Year stuff? I think you had mm-hmm. switched, you had got to Cooper at that point. Has the gap between Cooper and Khan widened for you over the last month or so? Is it about the same thing for you, or where are you at with those two?
It's not a gap. They're right there together. Like, mm-hmm. it's not like this massive deal. I think Cooper Flagg has turned the corner, and I believe the consistent confidence that he's played with and the impact he's had for Dallas has been important. Not that, like, that doesn't degrade what Khan's done, but I think what Cooper's being asked to do is a whole heck of a lot harder to deal with because of, A, the context, and B, like, you're in the Western Conference, and we are asking you to basically renew our entire team. So it's not a gap. It's not a gap. You know what I mean? The teeth are straight. We have braces on, and we just got
there. We have braces on.
So it's not a massive gap between those two. It's 1A, 1B for me with those two. I don't think I would choose another person to be Rookie of the Year outside of those two. But Cooper Flagg's just been so good in this. And I think it's a respect to the growth, because the start of the season for him was tough. Teams were ready for him, and he was trying to figure out, where are my spots? Where am I attacking? How am I getting this done? And to see him understand okay, I can get this left-hand drive off whenever I want. If you give me space, I'm going to turn the corner. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to get a layup. I'm going to get my pull-up. And so the command from Cooper Flagg is where I kind of give him just a little nudge over Khan, who has been insane. You know what I mean? Like, these are two great rookies. I want that to be very, very clear.
Yeah, I think that's fair. That's why I just want to see, like, how, I figured, I knew they were close for you, but I was just like, okay, is this starting to, is it closing in because of some stuff Khan's done? Is it starting to widen a little bit because Cooper is continuing to play well? Just wanted to kind of get a gauge there. I think for me,
we're keeping our mouth guard in, retainer in at night. We're good.
I think that's fair. I think for me, and I said this when we talked about this a month or so ago, it's like, okay, I have Khan right now, but I do think Cooper is closing the gap with what he's been able to do. And I think that answer remains consistent for me as we are now a month from that conversation. When we had the conversation on December 16th, funny enough, since then, 19-6-4 for Khan, 55 on twos, 46 on threes, 88 from the line. Insane. Cooper Flagg during that stretch, 27-5, a steal and a block, 51 on twos, 33% on threes, still not where you want to be, but higher than where it was at the start of the year. Getting comfortable with those pull-ups, Steve. 79 from the line. He's getting to the line a good deal for a rookie. And to your point about the impact, the Mavericks have won the Cooper Flagg minutes by 39 total points during this stretch. They're on a bit of a win streak right now. Shout out to Cooper Flagg. Shout out to Dwight Powell, who's just, I guess, the mini savior right now in Dallas, doing a little bit of everything for them, screening, rolling, all the good stuff. But, you know, this is where I'm like, I still have Khan right now. He's still leading rookies in scoring. The efficiency is still absurd. The playmaking, the driving still pops for me. Like, I appreciate, not that it's all gone well, but like Cooper Flagg is just firmly a better defender than him. I'm not going to argue that he's not. But like, I appreciate that Khan is not a sieve defensively, or sieve, however you say the word. Like, he competes. He takes on tough assignments. Part of him taking on tough assignments is because Charlotte is pretty barren in terms of perimeter defenders on the roster, especially if Sion James is not in the lineup. So he has to take some of these on by default. But, like, he's competing on that end. And as you mentioned, the shooting is just kind of insane across multiple platforms. Look at the advanced stuff. Like, I am an EPM truther as far as those kind of metrics. He does still lead the rookie class in that. Cooper Flagg starting to close in. He was, like, a massive negative because of what the start was. That wasn't his fault. But that is starting to close. So, again, we talk about this in February or early March. I may just be at Cooper 1, Con 2. But still, as of now, I have Cooper with a slight edge. That gap is starting to close, to answer my own question.
No, you're good. And so you're a DPM truther. I'm a BPM truther. I like house music. And Con Knipple has taken care of the Charlotte Hornets house so far this season with his play, being able to get downhill and attack offensively.
No way. So
you gotta salute him for that.
I'm not letting you get that off. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. What's your all-rookie first team? We have the same first team. What's your second team? We are transitioning. I can't believe you.
Well, an EPM to a BPM joke. I believe you have a graphic. So what's your second team all-rookie?
Dear heavens. I got to ground myself because I had like this big picture question I had for you about rookies. I'm trying to recover from that BPM. I'm the Durham musician on the pod, and here you go. Anyway, second team for me, Dylan Harper, but I have some questions for you, Steve. Colin Murray-Boyles, Trey Johnson, Yegor Jimin, and Jeremiah Fears on the second team right now, but also have some questions for him as well. But that is my second team. Any surprises for you with my second team, Steve?
As far as your choices, like you as a person or the personnel that you chose?
That is amazing. The players that I chose.
The only surprise would be Trey Johnson. It's surprising to see you respect a bucket getter. I think for me, my second team would probably, like, Jeremiah Fears has, it's interesting with Jeremiah Fears because part of what made the start of his rookie campaign so good was he was consistent in a way that you didn't expect. He is of a certain size. He's a scoring guard. And a lot of people don't appreciate that archetype these days, right? And so he had that consistency. And then teams were like, hey, man, we're going to put some size and length on you, buddy. We're going to go under and switch. What are you going to do about that? It's like, oh, well, okay. That's interesting. And also Jordan Poole plays. So that dings him. Dylan Harper, for me, was very high early. And I still have the upside with Dylan Harper. And then the injury happened, still high, and he came back. And it's like, ooh, I have loved everything about what you've done this year, except when I type your stats into an internet browser and have to look at them. Because, like, the drives went up, right? And it's like, cool, this is great. And then it's like, what kind of shots are you making outside of the restricted area? And so that's a part of a rookie year. Like, he's got so much poise and composure, and he's able to get downhill, and he plays in a flow and attacks in transition, an important part for the Spurs with the three-guard attack. But it's like, okay, we need to make sure that you don't live in a world where defenses are helping off you when you're spaced and they're daring you to shoot and staying at home when you drive. And so it's just like, okay, can we meld all of this together, Dylan Harper? Because you're too good for me to kind of look at what I'm seeing statistically and believe that's the truth. So that's where I was at with Dylan Harper, but he's on my second team. Colin Murray Boyles is someone that I've debated all year long because he's my type of player.
He's a dog.
Get that dog. And so, you know, they played him at the five early when they had to and unlocked him as a roller, but he's the defense that he brings to the table every single night is something that's really tough to deal with. I felt really good about that. And Yegor, boy.
Yeah. He's a shooter, Steve. Like everyone expected, you see.
Buddy, light him up. He's letting it fly from deep. And like, I've just enjoyed that portion of it. Like, hey. Cool, man. You want to be physical with me on the drives? I'm spaced. I'm shot up, letting it fly. Is that an under? Cool. Letting it fly. Did you not believe I shoot the ball? Hey, guess what? Letting it fly. And he just keeps making these shots. Man. And it's like, this is great. I love this. And so that's probably my base. What I will say, where I differ with you, where I concur, is one name that I have on my list that I don't think you do. And it's time for you to respect Caleb Love.
Okay.
It's because the shot making from Caleb Love has really elevated during this stretch. And his ability to make three huge. Well, when you put it that way. But his energy and his effort and his ability to pressure the ball full court. If you are of a certain age and you squint, sometimes he looks like a certain other guard for Portland. If you make the window real small, you can see elements of a certain guard that plays for the Blazers. Scoot? No.
Okay. Oh, I had to pop.
It's fine. Save your dollars. But like his ability to just kind of consistently contribute offensively and knock shots down and impact them defensively, it's just been fun to watch him grow. So I probably would have Love and Murray Boyles with Yegor, Jeremiah Fears, and Dylan Harper. Shout out to Maxime Raynon. But boy, someone's trying to snatch your chain in Sacramento. I'll tell you that much, buddy.
Hey, man. Okay. So I want to circle back to this before I get to the shout outs. The Dylan Harper thing, and I tweeted about this recently. He needs counters because teams are absolutely saying, oh, you're spaced behind the 3-point line. We don't care about none of that. And we are waiting on these drives. And I think it's putting a spotlight on, hey, what exactly is the mid-range shot making? What exactly is the mid-range footwork? How clean are these gathers for Dylan Harper? Because I think most of the time I look at it, it's like, okay, this is kind of smooth. You just kind of have to make these. And there are also some weird gathers where he's sensing a defender getting ready to step up and he gets into some of these leaning shots. It's like, oh, you're not really prepared for these yet. Like, you are a rookie and a rookie on a good team. So, like, I'm not super concerned, but it's just like, yeah, I can see where this might get a little hazy. And as we get close to playoff time, the minutes may go from 25 a night to 20 to 17, that kind of thing, if you can't figure it out.
Can I deliver a kind counter?
Yes.
Well, I think I understand and agree with what you're saying. How much of that is Dylan Harper and how much of that is, hey, the Spurs are good and we need to lock in on them in a way that we didn't anticipate when we played them earlier? We need to update the scout report and put y'all, you know what I mean? Like, they're the 2 seed in the West. Like, we need we need to make sure that guy doesn't do stuff. And so I think what I would say to that is I trust the footwork and the poise that he has. For me, when I watch the tape, I'm waiting on the results. It doesn't necessarily feel like, ooh, you can't do this. It more so feels like, hey, man, you kind of need to do this. And so that's kind of where my brain is at. Do you think that's fair?
No, I think that's fair. That's where it's just like, I think the mid-range shot making will, like, I don't think he's going to turn into Kevin Durant. Now, if he has an outlier like development path over the next few years. Like, obviously you take that because he's a fun player. But like, he just needs to get to a level to where, oh, you are giving me this. These are the two shots that I can get to whenever I want to. Where it feels like there's a little bit of an in-between. Like, sometimes it's just a smooth step back jumper. It's like, okay, cool. Sometimes I'm getting into a floater and like the footwork and just the handedness he wants to go with those floaters, that can get kind of wonky for him. Sometimes, like, actually, I am getting to the rim anyway. And that's where some of the, he's not the most vertically explosive guy. Strong for his size. He has the craft and the footwork, but like, just flat out, I'm just going to dunk on you type B. He's not that. And so when he does force the issue sometimes, you see, ooh, that is a miss, but also, oh man, you are kind of getting swallowed up here at the rim. Like, that's kind of problematic. And so that's where I'm like, I want to see the counters for him just as a player. And to your point, because the Spurs are actually a good team, you actually need those counters sooner than a rookie guard typically would. Because this is a team that is, if not ready, they are almost ready to compete for a championship right now. So it kind of puts a bit of an unfair spotlight on, but that's where I'm kind of tracking on that front. Quickly, the Colin Murray Boyles has started the last nine games. 11 points. Hey, Steve, 11, 8, and 4 over a steal and a block per game across these nine, 62% on twos. I don't think they anticipated needing to start him to this degree because Jakob Poeltl's still trying to get right and all that good stuff. But like you mentioned, the short roll playmaking, the finishing is getting better. Has not made a three during the stretch, so that's a little bit concerning. But like everything else he does, and him plus Scotty Barnes has just been good stuff for Toronto pretty much all year long because of the different player types that they can defend. So like that part's been fun. As for the honorable mentions, I'm with you with Maxine right now. And frankly, if we're just talking about which rookie has been productive slash impactful on just a per possession basis, and can we, I only got 15 seconds. I just want to say the name of Dylan Cartwell, also in Sacramento. One, I love how he amps up the crowd. He's just a very energetic player. But beyond that, defends his tail off, screens his tail off. Like he's fun. The center room, some legitimate bright spots in Sacramento there. Ryan Kalkbrenner, just need him to give go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say about my man in Sacramento, he'd be emoting like it's Fortnite.
And that's the kind of energy Sacramento needs. So shout out to him. Shout out to Maxine. Ryan Kalkbrenner has been like a second team. No way. Ryan Kalkbrenner has been a second team guy for most of the year. It's just he missed the big block of time and he's still clearly working himself back. So we're going to give that some time. Would not be a surprise if he winds back up on my second team. Can I give you one more name, Steve?
I'm intrigued. Hold on. Before you say this, there's without a doubt, there's no doubt in my mind, and I'm going to trust our wonderful production staff. I love all y'all. He's about to say, Real Richard, go to a one box. Get me out of here.
I will say, one of the parameters I wanted to set, so Dog gets technically two names. Now, I'll talk about Real Richard, but like the rookie of the year, all rookie teams, they are not susceptible to the 65 games played room, so like, that doesn't matter. Parameters that I was setting, I think it's 25 games played, 20 minutes a game, get the rotation players in. So Will Richards at like 19. I think he has been good enough to be on the team. So like I may end up bending on that by the end of the year, honestly, to be transparent about it. But like that's why I don't have him. He's been good. Who I wanted to talk about, Steve, was Ace Bailey. Who I think has And so like this is an extra funny reaction from Steve because at the beginning of the year, we were talking about potential rookie of the year candidates, et cetera. I was like, hey, Cooper Flagg's probably going to be up here. I would keep an eye on Ace Bailey because I was anticipating he's probably going to start or get high minutes. Him plus Will Hardy and the way that they're going to use him is going to be fun. And I think he may have a better rookie season than people are anticipating. And then he had his start to the rookie season. And it was like, oh, well, he's a little further behind than I thought. These minutes aren't coming the way that I thought they were going to come. Like, this is when Speed McKaylee was knocking out all kinds of threes and Utah was mending his minutes. I was like, okay, well, that's fine. Hey, Steve, Ace Bailey on the year. 11 points, 4 boards, 2 assists, nearly a steal, 53% on twos, 35% on threes, 72 from the line. Over his last 6 games, 16 points per game on 59% shooting inside the arc, 36% on threes, has not missed a free throw, 5 boards, 2 assists. And the thing I really wanted to highlight with Ace Bailey, I think it does bleed into the overall, Will Hardy has a really good handle on how to get him touches and how to get him the ball in situations that will get the best out of him. Let's get him catches on the move. Let's get him in handoffs. Let's have him start the elbow, have the big screen for him to lift up at the wing, and then we can flow into a pick and roll from there, et cetera. His chemistry with Yusuf Nurkić has been very good, Steve, especially as of late. And this is where I was intrigued by, like, the Colin Sexton, Yusuf Nurkic deal. As you know, I have not had the highest opinion of Yusuf Nurkic. The finishing hasn't been great.
For 4 years!
And listen, the finishing hasn't been great. The defense hasn't been great. And those are tough things to come back from as a big getting minutes, right? But when the trade happened, everyone was like, man, what the heck is Utah doing? What is this? I tweeted, hey, I think Will Hardy's going to do some fun things with Yusuf Nurkic. I think the guards and all the perimeter players are going to enjoy the screening that Yusuf Nurkic provides and some of the playmaking they're going to unlock. And Steve, every game, multiple times a game, it is Ace Bailey and Yusuf Nurkic connecting on something. It is the handoff stuff. It's the pick and roll stuff. Sometimes it's Ace has the ball, pitches to Yusuf Nurkic. I'm going to cut off of you. And then here's this bounce pass through a tight window from Yusuf Nurkic to Ace Bailey. I'm just saying, keep an eye on the Ace Bailey all-rookie case. Especially if, you know, to your Jeremiah Fears point, teams have adjusted, the efficiency is in the tank. Like, I don't care much about New Orleans losing their minutes with the rookies because you're supposed to lose minutes with rookies. But, like, if the Jeremiah Fears thing keeps happening, if Yegor stops making threes, if Trey Johnson, I've enjoyed the shot making, I've been intrigued by some of the passing flashes. If it's just the shot making, there is going to be a pathway for Ace Bailey to end up making this team for me. So I just want to put that on the radar. I want to salute what he's doing in Utah. And a quick salute to Houston Rockets for help.
What a lost money. If you had told me Nikai's going to tell me Ace Bailey was on his all rookie second team, would lost money. If Nikai's going to praise Yusuf Nurkic and Utah, I might as well push my luck. What do you think about Kevin Love and Utah this year, buddy?
You know, important veteran presence. I appreciate Keontae George talking about him.
And what okay, let's talk about Coach of the Year very quickly.
All right, Steve. How many is Coach of the Year? I think it's also three on the ballot there. How many coaches are you considering for your top three before we get into who your actual winner is?
Oh, you're asking me? You know better than ask me. We're going to dive deeper.
I know. You normally shout out.
We're talking about these rookies. But for me, Coach of the Year, I got about at least double digits. 12?
I could say. Oh, yeah. 12. I could say. Okay. I was at 7. So we're not too far off.
Okay. Okay, go ahead and give me yours, and I'll save my extended rant for later. I'll save my mixtape for later.
Okay, understood. All right, so the three names that I would have on my ballot right now, I think for the how the heck are they doing this division, you have Jordan Ott in Phoenix, and you have Joe Mazzulla in Boston. With Jordan Ott, no Kevin Durant, new coach comes in, we're going to reconfigure this, we're going to defend at a high level, et cetera. As of recording, 27-17, they're just firmly in the playoff picture right now. 14th in offense, 6th in defense when they were one of the worst defenses in the league last year, 9th in net rating per clean the glass. And with the Boston Celtics, I will once again say, me and you were intrigued and a little bit higher than most on what Boston could be this year. I don't know if either one of us anticipated, hey, we're going to be a top two or top three seed in the Eastern Conference. And have the second best offense in the league and flirt with a top 10 defense and be third in net rating overall per clean the glass. Joe Mazzulla deserves his props. Empowering Jaylen Brown, empowering some of these guards, what he's been able to get out of the big man group. Nemias Cato's been very good. Shifting the defense a little bit. We're getting into a little bit more cross matching. We're ramping up some of the full court pressure, at least compared to last year. So like there have been legitimate schematic tweaks to this group as well. Joe Mazzulla's done a great job. And then the other name that I wanted to bring up, Steve. And I feel like I'm going to be in the minority in bringing this name up, not even like a cocky way or anything like that. I think Mark Daigneault really deserves to be in this conversation. I know how good the Thunder were last year. They win the championship. They have a higher net rating than they did last year. They have a better defense than what it was last year. They are a top five offense. And this is while having 6 players in their immediate rotation that have missed at least 10 games. Jalen Williams has missed 21 games and counting. Isaiah Hartenstein has missed 21 games and counting. Jalen Williams, the big, has missed 15, rotation big for you. 14 missed for Aaron Wiggins, 13 missed for Alex Caruso. Lou Dort's missed 10. Chet has missed 6. Isaiah Joe has missed 9. And it's just like, hey, man, you're not supposed to be cycling through all of these players, all of these important players, as we talk about Hartenstein, Jalen Williams, Chet, and Caruso. And not only are you the best team in the league with a gap, you're still technically on like a 70 win pace right now. You have technically been better than you were last year while missing all of these pieces. And this is a year after they were missing a bunch of pieces last year and they were still really good. I just think even if he doesn't win, like he deserves to be on ballots for what he's been able to do with this, with all Because it was, what was it, Thunder Cavs earlier in the week? And during the broadcast, they mentioned only the Clippers had a higher number of, like, missed games from their players combined than the Thunder have. And it's like, what do you mean those two teams are together? And the Thunder are up here. I just wanted to make sure Mark Dagnall got his props. He's doing a tremendous job. And this Thunder team is incredibly good.
I couldn't speak for a minute. Mark Dagnall. No, you're good. I think the tricky part is the Western Conference has like four. Mark Dagnall should be up there. Mitch Johnson has done an incredible job. David Adelman has done an incredible job with the Nuggets, not only playing well, but doing this without Nikola Jokic for a stretch. He should get a shout. Jordan Ott has been phenomenal to revamp the Phoenix culture and get them to buy in on both ends of the floor. Ime Udoka has navigated this in Houston and got them to be methodical and play defense. Joe Mazzulla deserves a shout because, hey, he's a madman, and that Celtics compete every night and they're the 2 seed. Darko deserves some praise because Toronto is, you know, hasn't always been pretty, but they've worked. Mike Brown, if they can get the defense right, he'll probably knock on the door. I think, and no Nick Nurse for finding a way to figure out after last year, boy, that didn't work. Let's get some drives. Let's figure it out. Joel Embiid will get me out. It's JB Bickerstaff for me.
There we go. Okay.
It's JB Bickerstaff for me. When you look at the Detroit Pistons and when you, you know, one of the more underrated skills for a coach, it's to understand the talent you have, to maximize that talent, and to get the entire roster to buy in. And he's done that. Mm-hmm. And he's done that all season long. He's kept them at the top of the Eastern Conference. We've talked about all these other teams. Detroit has stayed at the top. And, like, Cade being great has been phenomenal. The growth of Jalen Duren has been great. But if you go from the top down on that roster, you see an identity where everyone contributes. You see an identity where Cade's out, and you're like, oh, cool, Danis Jenkins is about to cook. That's not what you anticipated earlier this year. I kind of thought it was going to happen. You see Duncan Robinson playing defense and running off screens. Like, there's not a guy that gets in that rotation that doesn't know what their job is and doesn't contribute to their success. That team defends. That team believes in whatever expectation you have for Detroit. They have exceeded it. So, for me, JB Bickerstaff's coach of the year.
Okay. I like it. I also was on that list. I mentioned I had 7. Dagnall, Ott, Mazzulla in the top 3 in some order. JB Bickerstaff, David Adelman, Mitch Johnson, and Darko are the other 4 that I had there. So, okay. I think we are relatively aligned. You went JB, but he's someone that deserves consideration as well. So, like, I'm not mad at that. I like it. I like it, Steve. All right. We're going to take a break. And when we return, we transition to the upcoming Unrivaled slate. And also, the WNBA schedule was released, which is great, assuming those games get to be played. But we'll talk about that and more. Please stay tuned. And we are back with this episode of Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is now time to talk about the upcoming Unrivaled slate. Later on tonight, for your Friday watchers, we have Miss BC at 3-2 taking on Rose BC. 3-2, they have lost their last 2. We'll see if they turn it around. And in the nightcap, Phantom BC taking on Vinyl BC. What intrigues you, Steve, about these matchups?
Well, I'm intrigued to see the Rose and Mist. The Mist have what feels like infinite defensive combinations, and the Rose have Chelsea Gray. So are the Mist going to be able to neutralize Chelsea Gray? Are they going to be able to have some of these double big lineups to kind of put some pressure on the Rose in a different way? Rose can go double big, but what does that do? Because you have Kai and you have Chelsea Gray, so you have 2 guards that you would want on the court. How does that look? And they have Arike and Alicia Gray, so I'm intrigued how that plays out.
I'm right there with you. Like, I think the Alicia Gray bit is going to be super important. I would imagine she starts. I think we're done with the lineup stuff with Miss BC. But she has been so good all year long. And the drives have been so impactful all year long. And so her in this matchup, as during this 2-game skid, seeing some of the drive containment, seeing some of the switching kind of being botched on some of these actions, like, that sets the table for some of the drives for Alicia Gray. So we're going to see what that looks like. Anytime we get Chelsea Gray and Breanna Stewart on the court on opposing sides, it's going to be good theater. Like, Chelsea is going to guard Stewie at some point. We'll see what those post touches look like. Breanna Stewart is going to be switched on to Chelsea Gray at some point. We will see what those isolation attempts look like. So I'm excited to see what that matchup looks like, who breaks the 3-2 tie between these two teams. As for Phantom Vinyl, oh boy, we talk about like potential double big things with the Phantom and the way that Vinyl defends and how physical they are. Like, what is that going to look like? And then we also just have Ryan Howard and Kelsey Plum. Like, that's going to be a lot of offensive firepower there. I would imagine Ryan guards KP. So, like, what is that going to look like? What is that screen navigation going to look like? The KP playmaking has really been popping as of late. And, you know, talked about in the last episode, Lasers BC, like, hey, let's throw two on the ball against Kelsey and see what she does with it. And she handled that pretty well as the game went on. And so just KP versus length in general is intriguing to me. So I'm excited to see what that looks like as well.
Oh, well, I think Phantom Vinyl is just competition is going to happen. If you're telling me that Kelsey Plum is on the court and Aaliyah Boston's on the court and Tip Hayes is on the court and Natasha Cloud's on the court and Kiki is out there against, you know what I mean? That's where I'm like, I'm intrigued to see what that looks like and how they deal with each other. Because that's still Courtney Williams. That's Ryan Howard. That's De'Erica Hamby. That's Ray Burrell. So antics may be abound.
Erica Wheeler's going to have it's going to be a physical competitive contest between those two teams. I am excited. Two Saturdays, Steve. We got Lunar Isles taking on Breeze BC. We got the High.
That matchup is made for me. Young Breeze FC stand up. Now, here's the thing, right? I don't have a jar next to me, but if I did, I would grab it and I put it right here. And I would tell you that we may have some crash outs in this game because the Breeze,
you reckon,
are young and they are ready to compete, and they are ready to tell you how ready they are to compete with Rekia Jackson and Paige Beckers and Cam Brink, who is going to block you an emote, and Dom Malanga and K Martin on my mama. Like, they're ready. Is there another team that's more ready? Then, you know, the record ain't there, but the Hootie Hoos are here to get buckets. And in particular, once again, I state, Rita Mabry and Aaliyah Edwards are ready to get shots up. And if Skylar Dickens is there, she is also ready to get shots up. So I'm ready for that matchup.
That could get funny. Quick thing, as you mentioned, kind of the personality of Breeze. It is very funny that you have Paige, who's hyper-competitive, and Cam, who's hyper-competitive, and Rekia, who's hyper-competitive, and Kate, who's hyper-competitive. And then it's just Dom Malanga, who's just like the sweetest person in the world on this group. It's like, it reminds me of Rose BC, where you have these uber-competitive players. Not to say that Dom isn't competitive, to be clear, but it's just like, they will be very demonstrative about some of this stuff. And then it's like Dom. And then with Rose, like Chelsea will light you up. Kyle light you up. Shakira light you up. And then it's just like Azaree Stevens is here. It's like, she's so nice. You know what I mean? Like, she'll let you hear it too. But like, it's just like, it's very funny to like watch these dichotomies kind of play out with these rosters. But I'm right there with you. That should be a fun one. High versus Laces, where I'm intrigued. Clearly, this Laces group can defend. And they are willing to throw different things out there. I am. I say this because, again, defensive talent, defensive versatility for the Laces. Like, they are the better team, so we'll see. But, Rose BC is also better than the Hive, and the Hive won. So, like, that doesn't always matter. But, like, just what they want to accomplish defensively and what they want to do versus Kelsey Mitchell, who could just be used in a myriad of ways. Like, that's where I was like, oh, this could get fun, kind of watching the cat and mouse game there. Like, if you're going to throw different coverages to Kelsey Plum, why wouldn't you do that to Kelsey Mitchell as well? So, like, seeing how they work through that. And, again, even with the record being what it is with the Hive, every game they've gotten better. They've gotten more consistent. They've been able to sustain more on both ends of the floor. So, like, watching that growth is going to be fun. We got Sanai probably guarding Jackie at some point, who I'm sure we're going to do, like, unrivaled award thoughts at some point over the next couple of weeks. Does anyone have a stronger defensive player of the year case than Sanai Rivers right now? I'll toss that quick free throw to you. Because she's just been absurd this entire run.
I'm going to let you have that right now. I'll let you run with that.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We'll have deeper thought, of course. Okay, fair enough. And then on Sunday, we have Vinyl versus Mist. We have Phantom versus Rose. On Monday, we have Lunar Isles versus Hive. We have Laces versus The Breeze. Among those four matchups, Steve, who and what intrigues you the most?
The Phantom Rose of it all is where I'm just like, hey, what are we doing? Mm-hmm. I'm going to restart that. Sorry. Cut that, Sarah. Put it up. The Phantom Rose matchup to me gets really interesting because it's Chelsea against Kelsey. in a setting where Chelsea and Kelce can kind of have a steel cage match to a degree. So I'm intrigued to see what that looks like if we're talking that. Lace's Breeze is fun. Lunar Owl's Hive kind of grasps me. I like the Hive. I like the players on the Hive. I know they can defend. I have question marks about the scoring. Lunar Owls need some wins, and I know they can score. That's a dynamic that could get really interesting. So that stands out to me. The Mist against the Vinyl, it feels real competitive. Like, well, hey, let's get real. Let's get in the mud a little bit. So it's fun to watch the progression of the matchups, especially as the season goes on. It's 3-on-3, but like, we are competing. We're competing more, and we know what you're trying to do. And it just, it kind of, there's a build up to Unrivaled. I don't know if everyone appreciates to a certain degree.
I'm right there with you. Like, I think it's interesting. We're still relatively early in the season. Like, not everyone has played each other one time yet. So I think we're a week or so away from that being the case. So still getting taste of new matchups is a pretty fun one. I think to Vinyl Mist, though, and I've made this comment before, I think this is going to be a physical matchup. I don't think anybody's going to be happy by the end of that game. Just by how both of them want to defend and the different lineups we'll see tossed out between those two. There are going to be some drives to the basket, and they'll be like, hey, what the heck? What's happening here? Why am I not taking my one free throw for 2 points? What's going on? So I'm keeping an eye on that one. Lace's Breeze should be an absolute doozy. And I will just leave that one there. Phantom Rose, the double big battle. So I'm still tracking like how effective those lineups are going to be in this format. And both of them, with Kiki and Aaliyah with the Phantom, with Shakira and Azaray with the Rose, like that should be a fun battle there. So fun slate coming ahead, Steve. I want to get your thoughts on what the schedule releases were. We're going to save that for the next episode. We're going to get out of here, enjoy the weekend, try to stay warm with the weekend. So thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. Please subscribe if you haven't already. Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Subscribe to the Yahoo NBA YouTube channel if you haven't already, so you can get all of these fancy visuals. You can see Steve laughing at me when I make a point. You can follow me on socials at TheKaiusNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.